does the world need this to be written?
Hmm. Yeah. Is it a story that needs to be told?
Is it a story that needs to be told?
Yeah.
And unless that's clear as to why the answer is yes to that,
mm-hmm.
if it is yes.
Right, yeah.
Which we're assuming it's yes.
I've got a pretty good feeling.
Yeah,
about it.
I got a good feeling it is yes too. But
we were brought together, we met through, and think of all the different things that had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just for that to happen. And then we have all these similarities and yet polarities that, interestingly enough, have brought different things to each other's awareness. And we have a similar calling, albeit in different kinds of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And similar insights, which is, well, we have a fair amount of issues in the world, and you and I have been through some things and have found out some things.
I feel like we should be recording.
I already am.
Okay. That's actually really helpful.
I thought I'd sneak it by.
Well done, sir.
Because once you started talking, I was like, I'm just going to hit record, because usually just the things we talk about, that's...
Yeah. No, that's actually...
And I can always edit stuff out.
So oh, well. Yeah. That's 100% brilliant.
Well, and it gets us used to just doing it, too.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
more comfortable with it.
Keying up on it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm with you. I think there's a little bit too much what I would refer to as providence.
Mm-hmm.
Other people might refer to it as a kind of... idiosyncratic, simultaneous meeting of minds that just kind of made sense.
Mm.
But there's a bit more to it than that. And I think there is a story that each of us has to tell that might be helpful and needful even. And then beyond that, I think it's just, it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun.
Just kind of chatting and exploring things and who knows, maybe somebody out there might find it fun as well.
Exactly. And this is Michael who's talking, by the way. This is currently Deacon Michael, but soon to be, what's the...
Well, priest.
Priest. Yeah. So Father.
Yeah.
Father Michael.
So they say.
He's a good man for the job. And Michael is also... former Marine?
Yep, former Marine. Served in the U.S. Marine Corps as a scout in a light armor reconnaissance unit, which sounds a lot cooler than it actually was.
But he has an awesome story, and one of those, well, a bunch of them, but one of them is when he came back, he ended up selling his weapons and buying a fiddle.
Yep, that's true. I mean, that wasn't after Afghanistan. That was when I came back from Russia. I lived in Russia, by the way. That happened too.
There's that too.
Yeah. But we'll get to that.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd say...
Why are we here? This is Jesse, by the way.
This is Jesse.
Yeah. Jesse is a very unique and interesting fellow. I would say that among the people that I've met probably in the last 5 to 10 years, he's one of those few that, like, you just kind of... I don't know. Like, I just met you and I kind of got a sense that we could just talk forever.
Yeah, likewise.
Like, there's just a bunch of stuff that just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's exciting picking your brain about things.
Likewise. That is one of the reasons we're doing this.
Yeah.
Because of that, and we're both godly fellows, and this is a term amongst many other things that could use some cleanup out in the world. This is one of the things we've talked about quite a bit, which is a lot of terminology that gets used in a world where subjectivity is in vogue.
Mm.
It's like, what are we talking about? Because if we don't know the definitions of things, then we could be having two completely different conversations without even knowing it.
Yeah.
So this is something I like to do now and then. I like to just go ahead and look up the definitions of words, even if I know them, you know, just to see.
Yeah.
Because you never know what you don't know. But there's that, and there's we both have a passion for ministry, and that is a term that also is...
Yeah, that could use some refinement and some definition.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, I mean, for my own part, the way that I refer to what happened to me is that I was called into the ministry, which, of course, can mean one thing for one person and something completely different for another person. I did have a profound experience that led me to understand that God had something that he intended for my life, that I needed to explore. But then ministry in a broader sense, it's so far beyond, you know, this sort of, role, like a very specific role, because ministry is living. It's living by a certain set of what I would call kingdom principles, underneath the one who formed them, the king. You know, if we have a kingdom, we need to have a king. And so that I think is another interesting thing that we can explore, is what is ministering to people, what is ministry. Because, you know, we all have this picture of, you know, maybe a guy in robes, or, you know, with slick back hair and, you know, a suit and tie, who's doing ministry. But there's such a broad range behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that a lot of folks don't know. And that's one of the things I've loved about coming here, is finding people who really get this in a deeper way, because I had not experienced that before. It just wasn't my experience. And I think there's a lot of folks out there like that. And yeah.
Yeah.
Ministry is also the healing work. And that can take place in any number of ways. It's being like a catalyst.
Yeah.
A vector for God, Holy Spirit, Jesus, dare I say. this is a
forbidden. Hey, careful throwing that name around here. This is a family.
I know, right? I mean, seriously. But really, I mean, this is a lot of these are controversial terms out in the world.
Yeah.
And personally, it's great to come to a place where there's people who finally openly talk about God. I don't have to like beat around the bush about it, or
yeah.
And just finding out more too, because there are so many things about this religion that I didn't understand, and I had gotten secondhand from other people who didn't understand. As somebody who came into it as like more of a detective, who has a spiritual background, I'd say I'm here more as a detective, because it's where truth fits. And we just know. That's a beautiful thing, is we just have a way of kind of knowing. It's an internal compass and feeling when something is on the mark. And it can get really confusing out there when there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
And games and things that promote this. And what I mean by games is, you know, interpersonal games. And these are value systems around this stuff. And there's one thing Michael said from his time in Russia that I really liked, which is something that's lacking here in the West, but really caught my interest. And that was, would you mind repeating that, about these? What's the state of your soul?
The state of your soul.
Yeah.
But
that's something that they do out there.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the things that I came across a lot when I was living in Russia is something that I had never encountered in any Western context. And this is nothing against the West. I'm not renouncing my Westernness. I lean into it, actually. But the thing is, I've experienced the West in two contexts. When I've been living in the States, you know, most of the time, and I'm not saying it's not the case. It just seems to be the case that a lot of times when you're talking to a person, there's no acknowledgement that a soul even exists.
Yeah.
Like we don't really talk about the soul in the American context, because we have a hard time acknowledging the existence of a soul.
Yeah.
In England, I lived in England for a little bit, and while I was there, I had a sense that people did know that they had a soul. It was impolite to mention it. It was uncouth. And then, you know, maybe if you knew somebody for 10 years, you might mention one thing that you've experienced one time, and then that's about it. Yeah, I know. Ouch. I know. It's scandalous. But in Russia, you would go over to somebody's house, and they would pull out the tea, and they would pull out all the sweets, and they'd just throw it all on the table, and they'd sit down, and they'd be like, tell me about your soul. And I couldn't, I just loved that. Mm. I loved that, because it was so unpretentious.
Yeah.
There was so little expectation of, like, you know, oh, you have to be this way
right. In
order to be acceptable. It's like, no, I'm just really curious.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about the deep right. Stuff. Like, yeah. I'm all about it, man. I was just, yeah. So that was something that really, you know, you'd never know it unless you experienced it differently.
Yeah.
You know, because we live here and we don't really have the tools to discuss this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe that gets to another reason why this exists, is we're exploring these tools
exactly. Because
we're both, neither of us are experts.
Right.
Unless that was perhaps in any way, shape or form, you know, a nebulous quandary. It's yeah. Like, oh, these guys, are they saying they know what they're talking about? No. Yeah. So
we're like kind of respectfully mad scientists. And, but as Michael likes to say, has been saying recently, a beast consumes, but a tree abides.
A tree abides. Yeah. And so we are seeking to abide
through
the means of exploring. Mm-hmm. Really. And part of what we're exploring is these tools that we're coming across to talk about the depths of who and what we are.
Yeah.
What are we? Who are we? How are we? And why are we?
Yeah. It's a journey as much for us as it would be anybody tuning in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess one of the things, well, answer this for me, Jesse. Mm. Why are we calling this Waypoints in the Woods?
That came about from a few things, didn't it?
It did.
Well, one thing is something I've been called to ministry in an unconventional way. Kind of like Alan Watts, I suppose. If anybody knows who Alan Watts is.
Yeah, you might want to explain who Alan Watts is.
Alan Watts was a... I would call him a prophet of natural revelation that was popular in the 50s and 60s. And he had a very pleasant voice. And when he would really get into it, because the thing is with Alan Watts is he didn't usually plan anything out. He would kind of just be going along with this and that. And eventually he'd come to some kind of realization in the middle of his sermon, which is essentially what it was. It was some kind of sermon. He'd just go, wowie. Wowie. Yeah. Bingo. And what does that mean? That's another way of saying God be praised. It's reverence. It's a reverence. Which he found, and he was able to communicate to people who would not have been listening in any other way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that then led us on.
Yeah.
That kind of recognition that you kind of had this, you know, calling, if you will, a sort of sense of your place.
Yeah.
And then when the two of us got together... Mm-hmm. We started talking about these types of things, and we needed a term to describe these realizations, these recognitions of something that was pointing towards, you know, a deeper or a higher or a something that was resonant.
Yes, exactly.
The frequency of truth.
Mm-hmm.
And as you've pointed out, you know, that the truth has a frequency. And the term that seemed to fit the best was
Waypoint. Yeah.
And I think for my own part, Waypoints in the Woods, this life can seem like a dense forest at times.
Mm.
Sometimes it can be an open meadow. Sometimes it can even be a dark cave.
Yeah.
I've been there. Mm. I've been there multiple times.
Yeah, me too.
For multiple reasons. Mm. And what I have discovered in looking back, hindsight, is that there were moments along the way that I could definitively point to, even though I didn't fully understand them, but I recognize them now as that was not a turning point, but a waypoint.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It was a waypoint that I could, it had some sort of effect on me that directed me to something better.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I guess what we're hoping to do with this is to invite others on a journey through the woods, whatever that looks like for you. Mm. Your woods might be awesome.
Yeah, they might be.
Sunny or...
might be a big meadow.
Yeah, it might be a big meadow or, you know, it's that beautiful moment of, you know, just after dawn where golden sun is shining through the trees and... Or it might be stormy, and that might be great for you.
Mm.
Or it might be stormy, and that might be awful for you.
Mm.
Or it might be really dark right now. Wherever you are, it is part of your journey. And when you get to the next place, whenever that is and wherever that is, our I guess, hope is that in joining us in our journey, you might have language and tools to recognize your own waypoints.
Exactly.
Yeah. And, you know, like we said before, there is nothing expert in us. there is a little bit of experience. I think we've got some life experience between the two of us.
Yeah, we do.
And so, you know, what we do have, we're offering.
Yeah, exactly. And considering how much out there is in need, there's a lot of innovation needed in a lot of things, especially right now. Especially with things like healing.
Mm-hmm.
The mental health field is, it depends on where you are, but in a lot of places, it could be better.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of information that's come up in other ways, like on YouTube, podcasts, different modalities we might not have heard of, might not have had even the understanding for. And that's something I have a fair amount of experience with in recovering from a lot of things that are considered to be impossible to recover from.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, lo and behold,
mm-hmm.
as it turns out, not so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, miraculously so at times.
Mm-hmm.
Dare I use that? Such a scandalous term.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, Michael and I are here because we've experienced things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing I'm looking forward to is not just sort of telling those stories, which it is important to tell the story, but also to reflect back and to give place for the things that were happening that you didn't recognize in living through the story.
Yeah, exactly.
Because honestly, I think most of us, the stories upon which we need to reflect the most are oftentimes the ones that we avoid the most, you know, voraciously.
Yeah.
We don't want to go there.
Right.
We fight against it.
Mm.
And for a very obvious reason.
Yeah.
Because it's painful.
Yeah.
It is painful to re-experience or to consider with new categories the things that we have been through. And I guess for my own part, I was, to some extent, dragged through that process. I mean, I willingly, to some extent, I did sign up for it. But the thing is, like, if we knew when we start out how difficult things are going to be, I think most of us probably wouldn't go on that journey.
Yeah.
But it's through the support, you know, that we have around us and finding that and resonating with other people's struggles.
Mm, exactly.
That can then give us that courage.
Mm-hmm.
To and the faith, really.
Yeah.
To recognize that there is light on the other side of darkness.
Yeah.
And just because things are dark now does not mean that they will be dark forever.
Exactly.
And you have, you know, it's one thing to say that. It's a, you know, it makes a great cat poster.
Right.
But when you're around people who've lived it, and I've been very, I'm just going to use the term, I've been incredibly blessed.
Mm.
Through the people that I have been able to interact with and becoming aware of their stories, it's been one of the things that's really propelled me onward.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And this is one of the reasons why one of the most compelling things I think that Michael and I have been experiencing and kind of what we like to offer is that experience of discussing the state of your soul.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is not easy in the West, because we're a psychosocial species, and to some extent or another, nothing happens in a vacuum. There's a reason we tend to do things or end up a certain way. That's not to remove accountability or anything like that. It's just to say that, yeah, nothing happens in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we can kind of demonstrate that.
Yeah.
And also say, like, just how transformative that is, and the kind of things that people have been looking for advice to do out there, like, well, how do you get out of your head?
Mm.
Well,
mm-hmm. yeah,
it's an easy answer, excuse me, but it's not always easy. And this is another thing that we found, which is the value of what good friends and safe company really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's a feeling of safety the term safety is another thing that could use a little TLC. It doesn't mean to bubble wrap the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. I'll bubble wrap the world for me and my dysfunction. That's not, no offense, that's not what it means. What it means is a safety amongst friends. And I would hazard a guess that there's more than a fair amount of people out there who don't know what that really means, because yeah. we've not exactly experienced it before.
Mm-hmm.
And it can take some getting used to. It's like the rescue dogs. You can have a great rescue dog
mm-hmm.
and it's very well adjusted, but still every time that someone new comes over or any time that he has to go outside, it just locks up.
Yep. Yeah.
And it can take some doing.
Yeah.
But with the thing about the state of your soul thing is it's a reminder and it's a permission slip in a way. Like, look, we've all got something going on and we've been through things, and in a world that is so performance-based, I mean, to a T.
Mm.
Like, the reason that we get kind of caught up in obsessing over image, this also didn't happen in a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, there's reasons for that.
Right. One of the things Michael and I have said repeatedly is it's one of the most challenging things is to give grace to oneself.
Oh, yeah.
And allow for it. It's easy to look at a friend that you really love and care about and go, hey, man, of course, yeah, I mean, you know, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But to really feel that about yourself, that can take some doing and some experiencing, frankly, mm-hmm. of somebody saying that, like, really? It's good. Yeah. It's yeah. a repentance thing. We're also big on this,
mm-hmm.
you know, as churchly fellows.
Churchly fellows.
But really, and I was into this before coming here. And so when I started hearing, I was like, oh, yeah, that's what I've been trying to say for a long time.
Mm.
It's the importance of repentance is not something punitive. It's not to condemn. It's to clean.
Yeah, it's to restore.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of us, there's a lot tied up in our perceptions, to where we have this expectation that the response is going to be, you know, a certain way, and usually that's based on what we grew up with, and then that defines the way that we, you know, we carry our perception of ourselves, our perception of others, our perceptions of the world around us, and our perceptions of God as well.
Hmm.
And because and I don't, you know, it's not our fault that our perceptions are skewed, because our perceptions have been handed down to us.
Exactly.
And what repentance offers is it offers the possibility, just maybe, I'm not looking at this exactly the right way.
Yeah, exactly.
And there, it's instead of that carrying a sentencing, you know, like I judge with a gavel, instead, I often find that what that actually offers is a kind of releasing.
Yeah.
Far from further chains or confinement, it produces freedom.
Yeah.
And that it can be a scary thing to interact with. Until you know you come across it enough, or you do it enough, to where, oh well, actually this isn't scary.
Yeah.
Like this is actually, I mean, it's not enjoyable, but it's liberating.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, that there's so much within this notion of little signs, little waypoints that point to humanity and also divinity. It's the two together. And for us, you know, this has been a very a dear journey. Even though, you know, we can definitely say for a lot of our lives it was not enjoyable. And yet
still immensely blessed in any number of ways.
Yeah.
And really, that's like, for me, when you were, I forget what you're saying exactly, but you said something about, and I was immensely blessed. I just did a little internal check. What's my actual auto frequency to feeling blessed about things? Oh, immensely. Oh, yeah, terrific. Yeah. And so I'm usually kind of the first one to say if something is not quite right, almost Tourette's-y, like, hey, Jesse, how you doing? Well, you know, and some people have mistaken that for complaining, and that's not what I'm doing. I'm just kind of confessing and laying it out there, and it just helps to clear the air. And it's difficult in the West because we have all these kind of very regimented ways of holding things in, and it's just not, it's not particularly healthy. It's not particularly healthy to just divulge a bazillion things either.
Sure. Yeah,
that's the other side of the equation. Because I know people who've gotten carried away with this without any kind of, some kind of axiom that kind of helps give them some kind of grounding or stability. So it's one of those things, though, that like Michael said, we're not experts necessarily. We've got a lot of experience, but we're experimenting and kind of reporting on a lot of things more than anything else, and a journey.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of like spiritual gonzo journalism with practical advice that we know of. And what's the state of your soul?
Yeah. What's the state of your soul? Tell me about your soul.
Exactly. What a beautiful thing. And this is where so much healing is needed to begin with, because most people, as you say, don't even know how to say, what? Well, I just told you how my day was.
Right.
Or whatever. Yeah. Or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
I have found that to be such a phenomenon. And it's remarkable. And the term psyche means soul. This is how I like to segue into it. Because most people are familiar with psyche or psychology. That's okay. That's not too scandalous.
Yeah.
So I'll say, well, you know, the root word for psyche means soul. And there's another little bit to that, which is psychobiology. And this is one of many kind of convergence areas in different healing works out there, where I've found a validity for truth has a frequency to it. And finding and allowing those right pieces to come in or be revealed. And that's aided in my own healing and kind of reclamation of agency in a number of ways. And it's, you can see it from the inside too, because it produces insight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at first, it didn't look too pretty for me. And I didn't want to hear things like there's wisdom in the body. I didn't want to hear that kind of talk a few years back. I was very heady. It's like, what a bunch of malarkey. The body has wisdom. And don't bother me with this kind of thing.
Right.
But after a fair amount of experiences, and yeah, I was kind of forced through it a bunch of times too, just by life and God and spirit. And I would say, and even though it was like a stripping down in a number of ways. Was it a perfect process? Nope. But we don't live in a perfect world. As far as I'm aware, we live in a world that is tarnished and kind of fractured. So we only see like these broken glass pieces, whereas what it's needed is for it to be remedied. And part of that is allowing that, because it's, you know, it's a divine convergence there that needs to come in.
Yeah. Well, and I think another thing to explore is our authority to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And you may discover that you the authority that's been given to you begins with yourself.
Mm.
And so you have authority over your own decisions, your own reactions to things. You have authority over your choices. Mm. These are the things that you have authority in. And I think a lot of times we don't either recognize the authority that we do have, or the authority that we have scares us.
Yeah,
and
right.
We actually shy away from it, because our understanding of authority is, it comes from the brokenness that we've seen. We've seen lots of people exercise authority in a broken way. Mm. You know, even if they're, you know, for a time they kind of seem to be doing it in a good way.
Mm.
And then later on we come to find out that they really weren't. Or, you know, people start off well and then they don't end well.
Yeah, exactly.
And oftentimes that's because they were trying to exercise authority outside when they had no control inside.
Mm, yeah, exactly.
And so that's another thing that I'm really kind of looking forward to getting into is what does it mean for us to have authority?
Yeah.
Because we are authoritative figures.
Yeah.
Like we have, you know, we're top of the food chain.
Right, yeah.
In a lot of senses. Right. And I don't mean that, you know, flippantly. I mean that there's, I think there is a reason, I believe that there's a reason for why we humans are in the position that we're in on this planet. And there's something that I think we can learn from that.
Yeah.
Something that points us back to who we are and what we're meant to be.
Right. Yes, exactly.
Even though in a lot of ways we may not actually see that exercised in the way that it was intended.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's one thing that Michael and I have really bonded over and talked a lot about is finding that meaning and frequency, if you will, and kind of getting it cleaned up and experiencing it. And yeah, like Michael was saying about authority and speaking of a state of the soul thing, this is one thing I struggle with, is my own authority.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle with accepting that.
Yeah.
Or even permitting that. And this isn't something I'm like consciously choosing. It's from experience. And it's something that, in my experience, it takes a kind of dialogue with oneself and whatever part that's coming from to start kind of allowing that bridge to be formed. Because again, it's like that rescue dog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you could probably tell a rescue dog all day, well, rescue dog, if you do A, B, C, D, and et cetera, it's probably not going to make any difference because A, he doesn't understand it, but B, he needs to experience it.
Yeah, and the I think one of the things that hints at is that the level at which we're used to operating and talking about things is on the psychological level.
Yes, exactly.
When the injury, the need, the greatest need is deeper than that.
Yeah.
And you know, there's you can teach a dog, you know, through various means of, you know, either negative or positive reinforcement, not to bite.
Right.
But what is it within that dog that's making it feel like it needs to?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
What is it afraid of?
Right.
Why is it feeling threatened?
Right.
Why does it feel the need to assert its own dominance in this situation?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, these are the things that go deeper than just psychology, if
exactly.
you will.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're talking about the deepest needs that we have as human beings.
Yeah.
And you know, not to oversimplify it, but my understanding, essentially all of us, every single one of us, has a need, one of the most profound needs, to be noticed and loved.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when that isn't met, or it's met in a broken way, or rather, you know, it's not exactly met, but it's allayed in a broken way.
That's a great way of putting it.
You know, that produces more isolation. It produces, you know, more kind of obscuration of what actually is true.
Yeah.
And then, you know, people kind of lose their way even further.
Yeah.
But you live long enough and you notice that throughout all of that craziness that happens all throughout our lives, we still come across these signs.
Yeah.
The little
waypoints. Oh, yes,
that is. That, I really did set you up for that.
Yeah,
one.
You did.
Come on, say the word. Say the word. Yeah. And you know, that's another thing to explore.
Yeah.
Because it's not about us.
Right.
It's not.
Right.
It really isn't about us. We are experiencing things.
Yeah,
and there's no, you know, that's absolutely must be acknowledged.
Yeah.
And it's important to acknowledge that and explore that.
Mm.
But I don't think we can ever afford to lose ourselves in the thought that, like, that it is really all down to us.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Because I
thank God it isn't.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, it's actually reassuring.
Right?
On many levels, I think that's not the case. And allowing ourselves to be released from that, again, is another thing that tends to lead to liberation.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we'll explore in subsequent episodes... Do we call these episodes?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the most beautiful moments of our lives can also be some of the most painful.
Yeah, they can.
And I think instinctively we know that.
Mm.
Which is why we tend to put off healing.
Yeah.
For as long as we do. Because I think facing it, you know, I think there's a reason why lots of people are afraid of hospitals.
Yeah, exactly.
Is because they know that the type of stuff that goes on in a hospital, it usually leads to people being in pain for 3 to 6 weeks afterwards.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But they're healed.
Yeah, exactly.
a lot of times. Not all the time, but, you know, we're...
No, you're right on. I mean, I've been very big into healing for pretty much my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
That's just because of my background and everything else, but I didn't understand or know the extent of it. But there's always a driving force to find out more. And sometimes I found it in some of the most unexpected places. Mm-hmm. It was like kind of just building up this foundation slowly over time. Well, I did a bunch of other things, as we all do.
Mm-hmm.
But in really finding... and experiencing what soul actually means, like, because you can feel it once you start to experience that more and develop insight, and it's like, oh, this is what soul means? Well, I'll be. And then you start to feel an experience. Oh, this hurts. Well, there's usually a reason for that. Mm-hmm. And more often than not, it's going into that or getting a dialogue going. And there's no one size fits all for anything, but we do have universal similarities.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is one of many things that Michael and I talk about kind of as we experiment and go about our own healing ministries in our own lives too, with ourselves and whomever else we may come across.
Yeah.
And this is such a big one, though, the state of the soul thing, because that opens up such a richness of experience, and it enables things that people look for in advice videos, like how to get in a flow state. Yeah. You know, things like that. And it's, like Michael said about pain, this is what I wanted to cycle back to, and that was pain doesn't get the best PR either.
Yeah.
This is something that could use some cleanup, because not all pain is bad, but there's a distinction, because there is dirty pain. There's dirty pain, and then there's clean pain, and it can be difficult to tell the difference, and that takes some discernment. In my case, it's more like, I'm still learning, of course, but getting more of an understanding, like, oh, wait a minute, is this a dirty pain thing or a clean pain? A clean pain is typically growth promoting.
Mm-hmm.
Or somehow getting you in alignment. And it might be messy at times because you're finding out and finding a center of gravity and waypoints. But pain doesn't have to be... And ironically, as I think it was Carl Jung who said, whatever you resist, persists. And this is one of the things he's referring to. Ironically, in resisting things like that, it's just... It gives them a voice in another way. And they're just banging on the door saying, hey! Listen, or maybe a little more playfully, like the Navi fairy in Zelda. Hey,
yeah. Listen. Yeah, yeah, no. Pain of my existence.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Yeah. Yeah. And honestly, I think the... What's our goal?
Our goal is... It seems like to do exactly this and introduce people to things they might not have known about before. And some of that involves our life experience. Other involves the kind of work we're involved in, ministry. Other involves a permission slip to say, hey, sometimes thinking out of the box might not be so bad. Or rather, feeling outside of the box. I think that might be closer to the mark there. And Michael and I have discussed this before. Like, you never know what the right thing for somebody might be. Like, oh my God, that's exactly the thing I needed to hear. For somebody else, that might be the thing that sends them over the edge.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, we have to know thyself and be gentle with oneself as much as possible. And just to know that there is an intelligence in these things, just to know that and feel that is really something. Because when you can know it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... That's the step, several steps beyond feeling.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, especially in the place that we're at as a society, I think people are used to the idea of kind of feeling our way through life.
Mm.
You know, when you ask somebody about a powerful experience they had, oftentimes the first thing they'll tell you is how they felt. And I think that's important. I think recognizing and sitting with how it is that we were feeling, but that isn't my end goal.
Right.
My end goal is the knowing.
Yes. Exactly.
And which isn't to diminish or sideline the feeling. It's just recognizing that that's not where the finish is.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, my goal is to tell some stories.
Yes.
And it's to do some cool exploration.
Yeah.
About some topics that are very near and dear to our hearts. And then, you know, in the process of all of that, to learn something.
Yes, exactly.
To learn something. And if there is anything that comes out of this, that leads people to knowing something that is life-changing.
Yeah.
To discovering that thing that they can then hold on to.
Yeah.
Much like has been given to me.
Yeah.
Because there's things that, and this will come out in subsequent storytelling sessions.
Mm-hmm.
There's things that I don't just feel. I know.
Yes, exactly.
I know.
Yes.
And I don't know how I know.
Right.
I know.
Right.
And that in itself, I think, is a story that deserves to be told.
So I couldn't agree more.
You know, if we can do that,
yeah,
I think we've done something cool.
I like to call that a convergence, when you just have that, where you just know, because there's reverence there.
Mm.
And there's a lot of people out there who say, oh, believe this and that. Well, belief is great when it's in alignment, but that can be misused just like anything else. Carl Jung once said, when he was asked in his later years, "Will you believe in God?" He said, "I don't need to believe, I know."
Mm.
And he wasn't trying to be haughty or anything like that, but yeah, this guy's work was prolific, and it explored the soul, really explored the soul and the psyche, and it is just, there's a technology in there. Mm. I don't know how to say it any other way, but it is profound.
Mm.
And it's something that out in the world, we don't have much of a language for.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another thing Michael and I are kind of doing, is helping to put a voice to some of that.
Yeah, as we kind of bumble through it.
As we bumble through it, yeah.
Yeah.
And also to say, well, what do you see?
Yeah.
Because it's a Rorschach test at the same time. And it's also to get an idea, because sometimes we don't know. And I don't know is a beautiful thing, by the way.
Yep.
Because that's an invitation.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
All right, so what do you want to say? I don't... It's sort of like, I don't know what to do with my hands. How do we end this thing?
We're getting there. We're almost there. Okay. It's about that. It's about time. Yeah, would we close? Oh, yeah. This is another reason why Michael and I want to do this. When he said learning, because every time he and I sit down and do this, we learn things.
Yeah.
And we'll have moments where we just go, huh. Yeah.
It's so true.
And it's awesome. And the amount of, and we were talking about this earlier, the amount of things that had to happen just for he and I to have met.
Yeah. It's,
and to have connected in any number of ways. And it's, and to be at a similar enough place in our lives as well, to be able to connect in these ways too, it takes a lot. And it's very divinely guided in that way. And so it just kind of seemed like, the more we started talking, Michael brought up the idea. It's like, oh, you know, we could record this sometime and do a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope that there's something in this that people will find to be helpful, useful, maybe even fun.
Yeah.
And if there's any encouragement that I can offer, you know, for people who maybe this is the first time they're coming across anything like this. Allow your appetite for the unknown to grow.
Mm.
And understand that oftentimes the unknown, it for many of us, most of us, I may even say all of us, the standard response is to avoid.
Mm.
Avoid the unknown,
hmm,
because it represents something that can go horribly wrong.
Mm. Yeah.
It represents a threat.
Yeah.
An unforeseen threat.
Right.
And that's the instinctive response. And it's perfectly understandable. It's not any of our faults.
Right.
For having that sense. But...
Hmm.
Tolkien sometimes would refer to something that he called a eucataclysmic event. And you're familiar with the Greek prefix EU, euphoria, utopia.
Hmm.
you just means good or blessed or something like that.
Hmm.
You cataclysmic is something in which everything could potentially go wrong. Everything is going wrong.
Hmm.
And it seems absolutely impossible for anything good to come out of it.
Hmm.
And then it does.
Yeah, somehow.
And there is, in all the chaos, the chaotic cacophony of events, there is a note that rises above it all, and then it all turns into a harmony. Yeah. And I think the beauty of that is that you have to, or the challenge of it too, is that you have to sit through the hardship long enough, the unknown long enough, the fear and uncertainty long enough to discover the resolution.
Yeah.
And it's hard to see until you've seen it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that would be my encouragement.
As much as I want to end it there, because that's excellent. There's one additional thing I wanted to say.
Yeah, which was, that's all right.
In all the talk out there about the heart and the importance of the heart, there's something I'd like to point out. The heart is in itself a mind. In a way, it's actually a very powerful one too. The way the electromagnetism works, there is a broadcast, and it's quite large. And if I remember correctly, it's made out of the same material as the brain. So we kind of have a triune brain. We have the brain, we have the heart mind, and the gut mind, which is intuition and any number of other things. And lots of times these things are in need of repair because we come from a kind of broken system. And Michael and I can easily say, well, chalk it up to the fall, and we'll get into that sort of stuff, I'm sure, a number of times later.
At some point.
But it's just to say that it's not to be unexpected.
Right.
We're in need of repair. The world is in need of repair. And that's another part of this. And an understanding of things that does go a little bit beyond, because we've experienced some of that and have experienced the benefits of it, as well as some of the struggles. So it's a waypoint in the woods.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Well, on that bombshell.
Yeah.
It's been enjoyable talking for the last 53 minutes. And I love that you just hit record surreptitiously. That was a solid move on your part. I hope you guys will come along on this journey, and we'd love to hear how your journeys are going as well.
Yeah.
So here's to things to come.
Here's to things to come. And everybody who's here now, thank you so much for tuning in, and we look forward to chatting with you again soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.